Good morning. We'll continue on with the work session on House Bill 5002, the Department of Administrative Services. Dallas Wang continues to represent us from Legislative Fiscal, and the Subcommittee on General Government has Karen Segrist as the committee assistant. Dallas, will you remind us where we were at yesterday as we were going through the nine divisions?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we had finished, or at least reviewed my recommendations with the Human Resource Services Division. Some additional information has been requested, and I have some information, particularly Senator Winters might be interested in, actions taken by their Human Resource Services on those audits and positions. And I'll make copies and get them to you, Senator. And the next division up then would be Procurement, Fleet, and Surplus Services Division. This used to have a different name, but in the package is the transfer of the printing functions from this division to the Information Resource Management Division. So it has been reduced somewhat to just Procurement, Fleet, and Surplus Services. Your staff recommendation here is to reduce the other funds expenditure limitation by $786,120 for the salary freezes and inflation adjustments. Excuse me. We would also recommend a limited duration position and other funds limitation of $124,941. And this is to provide procurement support strictly to the public employees retirement system with respect to their ongoing efforts to upgrade their IT, their information systems. They have the number of contracts that will need to be processed, the amount of procurement support has exceeded expectations. We will make an appropriate adjustment. This will be funded by PERS directly, the Public Employees Retirement System. They, as you remember, the Public Employees Retirement System in its presentation has a request for one procurement position in-house. This would supplement or provide additional technical support within the procurement part of the Procurement, Fleet, and Surplus Services Division.
And the reason that your recommendation is through the procurement as opposed to the Information Resource and Management Division
is that it's strictly a procurement function to work with obtaining, working with the vendors and making sure that all the contracts are right. So it's less technical from an information technology standpoint and more contractual. We need the contractual and procurement expertise. And this again would be limited duration and strictly to support the needs of the public employees retirement system. And again, when we do the public employees retirement system, we will provide for the limitation of the transfer of the funding to this division or to the department from PERS in support of this position.
None of the technology infrastructure investments that we're funding through the Information Resource Management Division are procurement in nature?
No, I don't. No, sir. They are, with respect to the Information Resource
In the IRMD, technology infrastructure investments will be funded under package, or is the request under package, policy option package 450.
Yeah, those are not procurement-type investments. These are investments in personnel to beef up their internal capabilities.
Okay, so that's the reason for the distinction between this division and the Information Resource Management.
Yes, sir. Okay. So those are my recommendations with respect to what was presented in the governor's balanced budget for this division.
Thank you. You've heard the recommendations of Legislative Fiscal. Are there any questions of Dallas? Further questions? Let's go on to number seven, Facilities Division.
Facilities Division, we are recommending a reduction of other funds limitation by $533,797 for salary freezes and inflation adjustment, and elimination of one vacant position. The limitation for this position will be used for fund other personal services permanent financing actions but we will eliminate one vacant position. There are, and I will point out for purposes of the record, that there are vacant positions in this division that are we are recommending be held open and not recommending be eliminated, because they will be needed. The North Mall complex is completed. They will be needed to support that. So the division does have some vacant positions that will be needed in the next.
So the position authority is held open. Are we funding those positions for the entire biennium?
I believe that we have the funding in there right now.
Can we limit that?
We could probably make an adjustment. It's going to come on board, I believe, in August or September.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Cora Parker from the Department of Administrative Services. I believe the building is supposed to come online this fall, so there are probably a couple of months' worth of vacancy savings that you could achieve there if necessary. I don't want to commit on behalf of facilities. I don't know what the hiring and training process is, if there's actually a need to get those positions on board, you know, a month or so in advance in order to have them ready to take over that building when it comes online. I'd have to inquire with the
Can
director.
You do that and get back?
Certainly.
We have facilities to get back.
Certainly.
With you and Dallas and on that tour. Thank you very much. Are there other, Dallas, did I interrupt you too soon there on facilities division with regard to the vacancies?
No, sir.
Okay. Representative Senator Winters, you've heard the recommendation. Legislative fiscal. Any further questions?
No.
Relative to the facilities division?
No.
Okay. Dallas?
Yes. With respect to the risk management division, we're recommending the reduction of other funds limitation by $1,121,737 for salary freezes and inflation adjustment. This is principally due to essentially the reduction in the AG's rate, which we have just been informed really did get worked out yesterday at $98 an hour versus the $99 we used in the budget. So we're making an additional adjustment for that.
In the budget, we used 109.
We used 109 in the governor's balanced budget, and it's now been reduced to $98. There, also, I should like to point out that the co-chairs have recommended, and we have discussed this with risk management, a reduction in the assessment for liability by an overall assessment of $5.2 million. After reviewing, there was a lot of talk about the $16.3 million increase with respect to liability, potential liability. After reviewing the projections and the actuarial assumptions, the co-chairs were willing to assume the risk, if you will, within the budget by taking this reduction in assessment. The agencies, it doesn't eliminate all of the risk. We still, with the $16.3 million that was included in the governor's balanced budget, the liability fund was projected to be at about an actuarially sound position at the end of the 2003-05 biennium. This would take it a little further, It transfers risk from the fund a little bit to future operations. But the co-chairs have indicated a willingness to assume that liability, and we would like to say division.
We're hedging our bets.
We're hedging our bets, but I would like to put on the record that should the need arise in the future, I'd like to leave it open for the department to come back to the emergency board and report on that and the experience, and if need be, then increase or restore the assessments if needed, or a portion of them during the biennium. So that, but right now
we can revisit it if the need arises
in the emergency board.
In the emergency board.
But Dallas, the risk management is not something that's normally popped upon us. It's normally something that's in the mill a long ways away, working its way through. Is there any indication at this particular point relative to the tort liability assessment or relative to the tort liability that we may have? I realize that probably isn't something we discuss in any detail on the public record, but is there some indication that there are tort claims in the process that would result in the 16.3, or is the 11.1 that we're remaining with after this 5.2 self-insurance or self-risk at this point, is that a reasonable amount in your examination of the account, the 11.1?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're asking my opinion. I'll give it to you. It puts a little more risk on us, you know, than we would probably like in the best of all possible worlds. But there are, not knowing what the courts are going to do, there are a number of claims filed now. They've been filed there with respect to cutback in human services. The provisions, and there have been a disturbing number of on-the-job claims, sexual harassment, and the like. So the risk management folks are a little concerned. They were comfortable with the $16.3 million as keeping the fund solvent, actuarially solvent, not necessarily in a cash position. There is cash there. But if we had removed the 16 or recommended reduction of the 16.3, that would have caused an awful. I think that would have been put it in an actuarially unsound position. This would be on the halfway point. Yeah, halfway point. And as I said, I think we can leave it open to revisit and later on. Although it isn't something that has come before the e-board before, if you leave it open to assessments, allow them to assess again, or increase the assessments, that does spread the cost amongst the various funding sources as opposed to just taking a 100% hit to the E fund. And the people from the department are willing.
I understand that. So your recommendation is that we leave it open for assessment rather than coming from reassessment rather than coming back for a hit on the E fund.
Yep, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I think a report to the emergency board, though, would be okay. Appropriate. May want to ask the departments.
Okay, let's do that. But I would like to have them have to talk to at least one other issue in that regard. But risk management is the kind of an assessment which is more department by department driven as opposed to state government driven. So, in other words, when a department is sued and puts at risk the state, then it's that department which eventually is assessed the amount. And so I think this is the kind of an assessment which can be left open because a department could be tagged with the fund at a later time with the actual loss. Senator Devlin,
I was just wondering if one way to look at this is that we end up with a less than maybe prudent solution to lowering these costs in this biennium, in a sense, because we availed of ourselves of a less than prudent solution in the last biennium and paying and spending the reserves down to practically nothing. I mean,
isn't it true that two wrongs make a right?
Only in the legislature.
Gary, I would like to have some response. I guess the concern that I have is relative to the two things, that which Senator Winters and Senator Devlin have expressed, the concern of the rating of the fund in the past and whether or not this is a prudent kind of a way to assess the risk, pay as you go, if you will. So if you could respond to those, and then I have an additional question.
Right. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Gary Weeks, Director of the Department of Administrative Services. Excuse me. This is this really puts us at some risk. I mean, all of us, because you would be in the boat with us in approving this recommendation, in the sense that if we're not able to manage the risk, we would have to come back to the emergency board, and we certainly wouldn't want to take it out of the emergency fund. We would never ask you to do that. We would have to do it as a assessment increase across state government, and the assessment for risk management costs is a combination of history, loss history, as you pointed out, and then there's some spreading too that goes into the assessment for this. So it's we are putting ourselves at risk. We need to know that this is going to be a difficult 2 years ahead of us. There are a lot of things to be litigious about over the next 2 years. You know, we've got some concerns about, you know, federal, like the MUPL program, and whether or not are we going to sue the federal government over that. We have claims, as Dallas has pointed out, from employees around sexual harassment and other kinds of harassment, which, in an environment where there's no raises coming and no benefits of any kind and the morale is down, there's always the potential that you increase your opportunities to be sued. So I can't say to you, Mr. Chairman, that this is an unreasonable thing to do. It just puts us at some risk, and we need to know that. And we will do our best to manage the risk within the $11+ million that remains and try to keep the emergency board updated in terms of where we are. And if it looks like we're not going to be able to stay within the risk, allotment, then we'll have to come back to you and ask for that process to assess. Now, the dilemma will be the agencies won't have any money to pay the assessment, but, you know, they'll have to figure out how to manage that within their budget if we have to go out and assess. We would not ask you for a general fund appropriation.
Senators Winter and Devlin, is that responsive to the concerns that you have expressed? All right, thank you very much. Follow up then, Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for running late this morning, but could I return to an earlier item just briefly?
Let's finish up then on risk management here for just a moment. Gary, Director Weeks, I'm concerned about the proliferation of sexual harassment suits within the state. And I just want to confirm for the record what our policy is with regard to sexual harassment. I recognize we've got a lot of different bargaining units and that there's a lot of give, but having come from small local county government, we have zero tolerance policy with regard to sexual harassment. And it seems like that we're seeing folks involved in sexual harassment in one portion of our system move to another portion of the system, move to another, and with the proliferation, and finally, a settlement of the lawsuits involving millions of dollars, one specifically with regard to one of my institutions in Mount Hare County. My concern is, don't we have some kind of a zero tolerance to the sexual harassment lawsuits or sexual harassment amongst our employees?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we do have very clear admin rules that govern, you know, behavior of employees, particularly around sexual harassment. We do training routinely throughout state government about what constitutes sexual harassment and how employees need to behave with regard to their relationships with each other and so on. I know the case that you speak of, it was a real tragic case. I mean, clearly one where we as our employees were in the wrong. And we have to take that particular agency, I think, and maybe spend even more time focusing on the training of what constitutes sexual harassment. But we do have a very clear policy about that, and it is a zero tolerance policy. And if
we don't bargain away the zero tolerance with regard to any union bargaining, do we?
We don't, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we do not bargain around sexual harassment. I mean, that's management's responsibility, and the union would not, I don't think, in any way want us to do any different than what we're doing right now, and that is to have a zero tolerance policy.
Well, and our employee associations and unions are some of those folks that are most damaged when we have sexual harassment in the workplace going on. So I just am very concerned when I hear of these cases ongoing, not just a one-time hit, but ongoing from one workstation to another workstation, and then eventually resulting in many, many aggrieved parties, and then a rather significant amount of a litigation and settlement. So I just wanted to confirm for the record that isn't something that we would ever bargain away, that we're very aggressive in both the training as well as the pursuit of those particular cases.
Right, Mr. Chairman, and also the the reaction or the consequence for that kind of behavior, you know, we're not going to tolerate it. We're going to move to dismiss people who engage in that kind of behavior.
And the likelihood of the person who had been involved in this be showing up in another place in state government, we have some certainty that we would make all attempts to stop that from happening?
Well, Mr. Chairman, yeah, I don't know if that is happening, someone convicted of sexual harassment moving to another agency. If indeed it happened, I think we'd want to make sure that individual was aware that we weren't going to tolerate that behavior ever again. But, you know, those are grounds for termination. And we take it very, very seriously. It's not only a state, it's a federal law that's being violated in this case.
But when we talk about grounds for termination, when a person, an employee of the state, has actually been involved and we pay off a fairly sizable litigant's claims, does that person necessarily at that point, after the cost of potentially millions of dollars to the state tort liability fund and the risk management, does that person is it potential that they would continue in state employment?
Mr. Chairman, I think it would depend on the evidence that we have, because in some cases when we settle it, I'm not a lawyer, but when we settle a case, we haven't agreed to the guilt or innocence of the party. We've reached a settlement with the plaintiffs. So we would then have to step back and say, is there enough, in my view, and we'd need the Attorney General's advice, but it seems to me we have to step back then and say, now, do we feel there's enough evidence against this individual to terminate them? Because we haven't judged the guilt or innocence when we reach a settlement. I mean, there's an implied guilt, obviously, by the fact that we're willing to settle on these, and we have publicly said this is behavior, which we did in this case, this is behavior that won't be tolerated amongst our employees. So, you know, my expectation would be if we have any kind of evidence that there was real harassment going on, we would not hire that person again in state government.
Okay, I just needed some assurance that and then following these most recent as using legislative Fisker's direction here, that there have been a proliferation of these kinds of cases. Are we more aggressively training, teaching, and directing information out to the department heads to make certain that this is rooted out and snuffed out at early stages, so that we don't expose ourselves to this continued proliferation of sexual harassment cases?
Mr. Chairman, I can tell you and the committee that we have been, and I think we'll continue to be very aggressive around training in this area. I don't frankly know what the numbers look like, Mr. Chairman, in terms of how many we've had. We've had some large and very serious cases that involved a number of plaintiffs. In terms of how many, you know, is it an increasing number? I'm not sure. But it's enough, you know, that one case is enough for us to go out and say, we're not going to tolerate this. Here's what sexual harassment is. This is the behavior that is or is not acceptable, and so on.
Certainly within that department, I think that steps were immediately taken to address that. But I hope that all branches of state government are then notified, because, I mean, the risk is statewide, and these are all taxpayer funds. So that was my concern. Senator Winters?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. One, I would like to know if there is a trend that is increasing. You know, we're having more cases than we've had in the past. And also, whether or not when new managers come on board, we're immediately they're trained. I think sometimes there is an assumption that people know about sexual harassment and really don't know what constitutes sexual harassment. And maybe part of it, I don't know whether you do that, your initial training of individuals who are new to the state system. My other piece is if managers tolerate this behavior and have done nothing, what happens to the manager who knows about it and has not done anything about the issue?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, if a manager knows about this behavior, understands it's going on, and we can demonstrate that, then we're going to take action against the managers. And that would mean removal, demotion. You know, there are a number of choices that the agency has with management. Because we have to make an example. It's the management that either lets this happen or stops it. We have to accept that responsibility and protect our employees from this kind of behavior. Now, recognize that there are employees of the same class that are harassing, you know, each other, and we have to be able to intervene in those cases too. So,
I raise that because, you know, I know some of the anecdotal stories are that we have reported it to management and nothing happened. You know, reported it and nothing happened. And that's why I raise the question, if there had been the reporting to management, and what happens to management? Because I think the culpability is just as much within the perpetrator as it is in the management who turns their head and pretend that it doesn't exist when it does exist within their environment.
I agree, Senator.
Is there some kind of a hotline that state employees can call with both suggestions as well as potential reporting of egregious behavior? Is there any of that kind of? I know that we do have some hotlines in the state that help our employees, but this might be a resource that could help us intervene in some of these cases early.
Generally, if it happens in a agency where there's representation, generally the employee would go first to their union representation, and there's a grievance process and so on like that. Where there's no representation within an agency, then the employee has to go to management. Failing to get any response to management, you know, there's no specific hotline to do this, but they can call the Department of Administrative Services, and I can assure you our human resource division gets all kinds of calls and requests and information, which we would follow up on.
Great. Further questions relative to the issue of risk management?
Mr. Chair, just to, and Gary answered the question on settlement, of what would happen with the person who has been charged and there is a settlement, and of course having the no-fault piece in there really doesn't get you at the truth of the issue. Of the matter, so you still gave, and I know that's an AG or legal opinion, but and I know sometimes we settle so that we will conserve on cost, but I've often thought that we're still penny wise and pound foolish, because I'd like to get the person out of the system rather than keeping them in the system, and for convenience sake, just because we settle doesn't eliminate the issue. In fact, sometimes I think these settlements create more than actually are reducing, because what happens is that people understand, well, if I can make these charges and because the system doesn't want to go clear through the process, we will then settle it. And I, you know, whether it's in our system here at the state or in the rest of the court system, I have always thought it does not improve, if you will, over the long haul, because, and I'm just saying that to the AG's office if they're listening, I think somehow that we need to hold people accountable, and it isn't always taking the easy way that allows us to do that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Winters, just one last thing. I think it is the AG takes actions that he feels are in the best interest of the state and the best interest of the agency. It's then incumbent on us, I think, as managers, to find ways to deal with the problem even after there's a settlement. And if it's clear that the settlement was reached because we did some things that we shouldn't have been doing, then we have to take that on. Now, my sort of hesitation was, does that mean we can dismiss somebody? I'm uncertain about that. I mean, not wanting to trample on people's individual civil rights, you know, innocent until proven guilty and so on. But we would, I don't want to leave you with the impression that just once we've settled, everything is fine with us. And in the case that the chair brought up, there was a great deal of work done in that agency to move people out of positions that were causing this, to better educate people in that agency. So, and I think we have to use that as an example, Senator Winters.
Yeah, And I didn't say that to say that you didn't take action. My point is that, and whether it's talking about sexual harassment issues, but we've come to a place to where things are done for expediency's sake rather than done for getting the actual truth of issues. And because of doing things for expediency or because we think it's going to, quote, in dollars and cents, cost more in the long run, I think it sometimes prompts behavior in our society to do things. I'm reminded of individuals who used to, were not in an accident, but actually got there at an accident scene and claimed that they were in an accident. You know, so that they could benefit from saying I was there, and it's just, and our environment has just grown to a point where we're suit happy, and we find any reason to file those suits. So it, I just needed to put that on record that we do settlements as in a manner for convenience.
Thank you very much, Senator Winters. Are there further questions relative to the Risk Management Division? If not, we'll go ahead then and then return. Senator Devlin, you had a question, and I know Representative Patridge is now with us with the book on some issues that he had. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Probably a question for Mr. Weeks, actually. He just got a rest there for about 10 seconds. On the Surplus Services Division, in discussing an item with Co-Chair Schrader, probably one of the most frugal persons in the building. We were discussing the sale of surplus property and what my understanding was of state policy in terms of transfer of surplus state policy to other units of government at the cost of transfer. And I don't know if that is still the case, but in many cases that, you know, if we have surplus property in another unit of government, like a county or city wants the property, they don't pay the full cost of that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Cindy, come up here and help me, but if I get off base on this, the way the surplus property works is that the agency surpluses the property to our office.
Okay.
It's then sold. The first right to purchase goes to other state agencies. Okay. Then there's sort of a pecking order. Then there are other governmental agencies, nonprofits, members of the public. It is sold for it's a fraction of the cost. I think I mentioned to you all when I came here, I bought a desk in Credenza. I did, my agency did, for $100. So it's pennies on the dollar. But the pecking order goes other state agencies first, then other entities of government, and other nonprofits. And have I
and a follow up to that, Mr. Chairman. And then in terms of the sale of the property, it's somewhat valued at what we believe is the reason we get for the property. Should we just sell it on the open market?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, Cindy Becker, Assistant Director of Department of Administrative Services. We don't give anything away for free. The only time it might seem to be free is if we're trading. In other words, if the buying entity has something else and it's valued equally, then that transaction. Otherwise, everything is paid for and we value it at what we think we're able to get from it. And actually, we've had incredible success when we've sold a lot of these things on eBay, where before we priced it at X amount of money, and then on eBay we end up getting a lot more. So we're pushing as much as possible on eBay because we are reaping the rewards from that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll go back and tell the co-chair that he can't pick up another quarter.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, I went out to the surplus and got my desk and got it. And when I was a state ombudsman, I got my desk that I had as a state ombudsman at its surplus. And there's some nice looking furniture out there.
I hope to be able to replace my desk someday from out there too, Senator. I just want to know if any of that is ever sold privately. I'd like to be able to buy the flower table I've got up there to cut the legs off on so that it would fit under the counter. So.
Mr. Chair, you actually, the public can come in every day. There is a store that's open every afternoon for the public to come in and buy surplus property that's already been vetted through the agencies. And you can.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Patridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was trying to get to the Human Resources Services Division yesterday. I went over some of the items last night on the PICS list. I guess I have some concerns on human services that of the 52.42 FTE, there are 12 principal managers on this division, as well as then 7 state labor managers. And while I understand that they provide some services to, they provide services out in agencies, I'm just interested if, since they're the monitors of the classification system, if they looked internally at their own classification system, because it seems awfully high to me when the average salary for the division is $5,774 for this particular division of DAS, and in terms of dealing also with the risk management. I mean, these are the people who are going to deal on the front end with the risk management problems and some of those kinds of problems. So I had questions about that. In addition, I had questions. I was trying to look at the reports that we get, you know, in this division, the dues and subscriptions, the actuals in 99-2001 were 26,000. They jumped to 48. The 0103 estimates are 48,000, even though we only budgeted 25,000, and they're scheduled to be 38,000 during the next biennium. So I'm concerned, yeah, for just dues and subscriptions.
Which division?
This is Human Services, Human Resource Services Division. So I guess I'm concerned with this particular division, what services we're actually providing through this division, and whether the salaries that are there are within range of, you know, frankly, what's going on with the division. You know, I'm also concerned about, we've also, and once we do the rate adjustments for the Attorney General fees, I'll have a better idea of how, you know, what's going on here. I'm concerned with the amount of Attorney General's fees, and if these people are just picking up the phone a lot of the time and calling the Attorney General's office to ask them human resource questions versus handling what we do themselves to some degree. So I just bring that to the attention of the committee. I'd be interested to know, you probably can't tell me flat-footed now, or maybe you can, as to why such a high level of management staff in that division. I understand that we need experienced people, but by the same time, the functions we're providing, a lot of them are, you know, auditing, recruiting, you know, compensation, some of those kinds of things, which I don't perceive necessarily need to be a principal executive manager. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's ministerial, you know, training and development, but, you know, and all the labor relations people, we have 10 labor relations people, and they're all managers. They're all labor relations managers. So I'm just wondering.
Dallas, perhaps that's something that you could get back with Cora on, and that she could work with the Human Resource Services Division, Cora. And we did ask previously for an outline of the dues. Maybe we'd better get that summary detail on the dues of all 9 divisions, to whom paid and the amounts, so that we'll be able to just take a quick look at that before we wrap this up tomorrow morning. Okay, continuing on, we were finished with Risk Management Operations Division.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, your staff recommendation here is to reduce the other funds limitation by $304,780 for salary increase and inflation adjustment, and also reduce the other funds limitation by $97,875 and eliminate 1 vacant position in this division. Fairly straightforward. There is 1 position being eliminated along with the salary and OPE.
Okay. Questions of legislative fiscal relative to these recommendations? Continuing on, Office of Health Policy and Research.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, here we have a recommendation to reduce the general fund appropriation other funds limitation by $11,526 and $32,013 respectively for salary freezes and inflation adjustment. Also, a reduction in the general fund appropriation and other funds limitation for the elimination of one position by the general fund savings there would be $72,007 and other funds $5,420. This is one position but 0.75 FTE. Also, your staff is recommending general fund, a reduction in the general fund appropriation of a flat $600,000 for general research, classified as general research and other activities that are not directly related to the support of the Oregon Health Council, or Health Resources Commission, or Health Services Commission. A recommendation would be to allow the department to manage this reduction, we understand, and if need be, to come back later to the emergency board if it has some additional other funds limitation that it would choose to supplant this reduction. We have worked with the agency on this, and I believe that with the changes in the health plan, and we want to keep the structure intact to support the statutory responsibilities for supporting those commissions and offices, but we're recommending this reduction.
And the department managing the reduction will basically, do you have any feel for where that may be, that $600,000 reduction?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, indications are they would be eliminating two to a couple of positions and try to backfill a little bit with some other funds that they would try to obtain.
Okay. Questions regarding the Oregon Health Policy Research for the recommendation? Please proceed, Oregon Progress Board.
Oregon Progress Board, here's where we have a difference with the department. There were three FTEs here, but they weren't funded in the governor's budget. Your staff recommendation is to eliminate the FTE, provide no funding. The department doesn't agree with this. It has proposed instead for an assessment and some other funds limitation. So I just thought I'd point that out that there is a difference.
Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the probably only recommendation that Dallas has made that I probably disagree with. But I'm actually looking for a compromise in this. I'm looking at the original budget narrative that was presented that talks about the department would find internal financing for the position. I don't know what internal financing is. And then I see that the recommendation from the department now is to add it as a statewide assessment. I don't know if there's a possibility of leaving the department with the authority for the positions, but no funding. In a way, that's a little bit like when we fund only a portion of approved salary increases and expect the department to find the resources somewhere within the department to fund the positions. That's probably not the best policy way to do things, but I know that the governor has put a real emphasis on maintaining the Oregon Progress Board, and I'm searching for some way to actually keep at least the authority for the Oregon Progress Board there in the positions, actually.
Please, Dallas.
Mr. Chairman, I think you would still find the authority for the Progress Board in statute, that we're not amending any of the existing statutes. This just leaves it an empty no positions and no limitation. That doesn't preclude it from resurfacing towards the end of session, which might be the case. I've heard discussions to
Mr.
that.
Mr. Chairman, my preference would be to somehow leave the authority for the positions.
And Representative Devlin, I think Representative Johnson, or Senator Devlin, Representative Johnson had, in early discussions relative to the Progress Board, did in fact indicate that the value of the Progress Board had demonstrated itself in many instances in many locations, and that it was so valuable that probably private industry could be tapped to come forward and help out, recognizing that source of other funds by removal of the authority for the positions, then that would damage that ability to go to private industry and seek the other funds opportunity to fund those. So I would like to have had Representative Johnson here, and we will, she'll be back, I'm sure. I'd like to have had her input relative to what her thoughts were relative to allowing private industry to come forward and fund those. But I have problems myself with an across-the-board statewide assessment because even while the benefit of the Progress Board is spread throughout state government, I hesitate in a time of cutback and the difficulties we have in funding those vital services for the most vulnerable to be basically to be refunding or continue the funding of the Progress Board, which tells us how good of a job we're doing when we know we're doing a bad job in some respect. Senator?
Well, go ahead. I guess I would like to hear from Representative Johnson as to what she is proposing and her thoughts on this particular issue and whether she specifically has a foundation or foundations in it.
One of her own family foundations, perhaps.
I think I would like to have that discussion before we act on this.
We do need to have that discussion, and we need to hold that open for that. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to hear from Mr. Weeks also if he might have any suggestion as to this issue.
Director Weeks?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Devlin. This, as I said earlier when we did our general budget testimony, this Progress Board has taken on a very important role for the governor. I mean, the governor wants to use this Progress Board as a way of driving performance throughout state government. And I appreciate the chair's reservations about an assessment at a time when we're reducing services. But we're also in a period where we've got to get the most out of state government. We've got to get the best performance, we've got to get the best efficiency out of state government, and we want to use the Progress Board to help drive that. And I think the Progress Board has the potential to really show us not just where we're doing a good job, but where we're not doing a good job as well, and helping us therefore target our resources. So I can't tell you enough about how important this is from the governor's perspective that we maintain this. We need the positions. I mean, if we have no positions and no money, we have no Progress Board. And so I think you understand that. The Progress Board has raised money. And you should know that we raised $20,000 for the Progress Board just since the last action by the legislature to, withdraw funding. They got a $20,000 grant, and they're continuing to go out and look for money. The reality is it's going to be difficult to raise $600,000 in gifts and grants and so on like that for the Progress Board. And we felt that since the Progress Board does indeed impact all of state government, that an assessment across state government wasn't going to be unmanageable by most agencies, because we're not talking about a lot of money for as you spread it out across all the agencies. And if you combine the fundraising with the assessment, we think we could still put together a pretty viable program for the Progress Board, but it's really important to us to be able to drive the performance across state government.
Senator Winters?
Last session, and we actually, as a body, put a lot of pressure on, I know, my agencies to develop performance measurements. Last session, I think all of us served with Senator Yee, and who also has been pushing for performance measurements that says that we need a tool, we need a handle to make certain that agencies are performing and doing what they say that they're statutorily are required to do, and that we have a way of determining what outcomes are. And although I think if we eliminate the positions we've lost that piece, and I know that for the first, my committee have come back with a much better product this time than they did when they came before me last session. There's been a lot of work with the Department of Administrative Services and the Progress Board in order to helping them to define what measurements are and what is outcome. And I think that I don't know what they did prior to the other session, and I'm not going to go there, but I know for me in looking at what's happened for this legislative session, it is an improvement over the previous year when I sat as chair. That's why I said I think I'd like to hold this open until Representative Johnson comes to have a discussion both on that as well as the positions.
Representative Patridge?
I just want to say I think in 99 when I arrived, I put in a bill to eliminate the Progress Board, and we made some major changes, and I've traveled with Jeff and gone around, and while I think the Progress Board is good, I still question. I think it's nice to have high level outcomes, but frankly, I think we lack the data systems to track the high level outcomes to even tease out whether we're really meeting them or not. And in addition to that, I also question our ability, frankly, to even. I don't think managers are using performance. The Progress Board sets such high level outcomes, and I guess. After sitting in Ways and Means for three sessions, I'm amazed at some of the questions that we ask, and we don't even have basic management tools within the agencies as comparison pieces or other things. And so I'm concerned that while the Progress Board is nice to have such high-level outcomes, by the same token, we don't even have the basic management tools and skills within the agency. Yesterday in our Committee for Public Safety, we looked at the Department of Corrections and the cost per day per inmate and how it widely varied, and we couldn't even get explanations about why it varied so widely from institution to institution. Overtime stuff, nobody's tracking how people are doing overtime, just real basic management skills. And so I'd love to have the Progress Board, and I think it's nice to set high goals, I'm concerned that we don't even have we're not even training our managers at the very base level to monitor what's going on within their departments, nor do we have the tools. So I question whether we can fund such high-level outcomes in light of the fact that we don't even have basic management tools to do our job. So, I'd love to fund the Progress Board. I think Jeff Tryons and some of the work he's done is nationally renowned. But when the rubber hits the road on the budgets, especially in these kind of times, when we lack even the tools, and frankly, I don't think the departments have bought into this, nor the legislature to any great degree. So that's why I'm at.
Director Weeks?
Mr. Chairman, I was only going to add that I'm interested in making this not just sort of an inside government program. That the benchmarks that the Progress Board sets, we are now trying to relate to individual agency goals, which is what Senator Winters was talking about. Those individual agency goals have a set of measurements that are applied to them to determine whether or not we're achieving them. The interest that I have is to bring people in from outside government to look at that process. I have 16 men and women from some of the best-known companies in Oregon that are going to meet for the first time on the 27th of March to begin the process of working with us on the goals that we ought to have by agency and the measurement of those goals. We're going to use that group of 16 business leaders from Oregon to help us on the improvement of the business processes that Corey Streisinger is working on, the business streamlining processes. We're going to have them help us on performance management with individual agencies. And I think that's so important to get them engaged in this work and help us to decide, do we have the right goals? Not at the highest level that Representative Patridge is talking about, the benchmarks, but at the level of goals for the individual agency. I want folks from outside of government to look at the transportation goals and say, are these the right goals that the transportation agency is supposed to be working on? If not, what do you as businessmen and women, representing Oregon, who has to use the transportation system, what do you think the goals ought to be, and how should we measure our success? But that's how I see us getting some connection with people around this whole process of performance measurement and performance management. And eventually, you know, if you get good at this, you connect it to the budget, so you have performance budgeting. We don't do that. And in fact, I don't know that there is a state that really does a good performance budgeting process. But you have to start by having some agreement on what your goals are, how you're going to measure your progress, and then get good at that, and you can connect it to the budget. So it's just, that was my, I guess my last
Thank
comment
you.
Was to Thank let you know it's...
Mr. Chair, and I guess my concern is we don't need. I'd like to see us even have us. The progress board is great. I'd like to see us have, frankly, a set of tools that we develop as committee chairs and people during the interim that are actually tools that are easier to work with than these books and things. You know, those are the things that are under state budgeting, in my opinion, rather than setting high and lofty goals. About driving this or that. I mean, we're getting down to the numbers. We don't even have the numbers so to drive the broader range.
Dallas, do you have a response to that? You're an accountant. At least two or three other accountants here in the room as I look down.
I guess my response would be that we do look at agencies, what they are expected to provide, what the law requires them. To the extent that we can get out in the field and make assessments on how they're accomplishing it, we do that. And I would like to think that your staff's recommendations are somewhat tied to expectations that we have of an agency carrying out its function. We're somewhat restricted by the statute, and agencies are required to do certain things by law, and they are required to do certain things in certain processes which are set in law, so quite often that becomes the overriding thing. And we do look at their outcomes and whether or not we feel we're achieving them, and try to bring that to your attention, and that's our role, I believe, as legislative fiscal staff, is to tell you when we think an agency's not doing the job that it should be doing, or that it's not doing it maybe in the most efficient or effective manner.
I guess the concern that I have is relative to part of the reporting. Where are we going to get to in the reporting? Can we make it easier in that process at some point? Gary, this has got to be as frustrating for you as it is for somebody else that's a pencil pusher.
It is, Mr. Chairman, because we have this sense that not... how do I say this? That the information that's all that's provided is not very well used. You know, it's either not read or not used because it's not in a
format
that really makes it understandable.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I request sometimes.
Well,
Senator Winter?
Mr. Chair, Dallas and I were having our editorial comments over at the site, and I said it's information overload, and sometimes it is by request, and sometimes it's also by design. You know, by the time we get through this process, we have so much paper still with us, we, you know, all wish that we had stock in, you know, whoever's manufacturing paper. And, you know, there's two pieces of this. There's one that the system, the bureaucracy produces, and then there's those, because we don't know sometimes what we want to ask for, that we ask for a lot of other stuff, and so we become just inundated. It would be nice if we could get together in the interim and talk about streamlining systems somewhat, and streamlining what really is a necessity in presenting the budgets, as well as from a program standpoint, what kind of information that is really needed.
So what you're recommending, Senator, is a budget note that says that in the interim, the Department of Administrative Services will get together with at least one accountant as a member of the legislature and
figure it out.
And I don't know whether you figure it out or not.
Attempt to come up with a report that's more readable. Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As much as I love accountants and I love our chair, I appreciate...
I'll say something nice about attorneys shortly. Go ahead.
No, but I guess my concern is, too, you know, we've got a lot of number... We have a lot of number pushers, but they aren't necessarily people who may or may not have management consulting backgrounds to be able to go into these types of situations and prepare reports. And, I think I'm going to ask in our committee this afternoon... ahead of time, I'm going to say, you know, what are the top five reports that you use as a as a manager for, you know, one of our correctional facilities. What do you use to manage your facility? What are your top five? Nobody ever brings us the reports that they use to manage their facility. I want to see what they're using to manage their facility. I want to see what are the top five reports Gary Weeks uses to manage his department. I don't know what those are, and maybe they're existent or non-existent, depending on what kind of manager you are. But I'm going to ask that for everyone and see what they come up with, because I don't think the managers in state government have the report. I'm convinced of that after being here 3 years. Otherwise, they'd be bringing them to us. They wouldn't be running around trying to give us what we want. I mean, we look at all the reports. I look at reports on a weekly, monthly, you know, quarterly, and annual basis. So, you know, I want to know what management reports people are looking at. What's their overtime look like? What's their shift differentials look like? What are those things? And maybe that's what they use.
That's a concern.
I don't know. It's management 101, I think.
That is a concern, because I would guess after we looked at the and finally received the overtime report and Department of Corrections yesterday, that it is probably not a report that management uses to operate their facility. And maybe, in all fairness, some of the facilities which had extremely low overtime rates might have a manager that uses that. And it'd be interesting to see that manager move from one location to another and see if overtime went from 0.37% in that location where that particular manager was a manager of one of the corrections facilities, to where they're using 20% nearly overtime pay, and see if overtime were to drop in that facility, see if a manager was using it. It'd be very interesting.
So, Gary, I'd like to see your top five reports.
Okay.
For what you use to manage debts. And I know you're new back there, but I'd be interested to know what they are and what you look at and what how we tease these things out, because I'm trying to figure out how these, you know, how the conductor runs the train. I haven't quite figured that out yet, so I'm gonna ask that, and I'm gonna ask Doug, at least for our agencies and our subcommittee, to do that.
I think that's very valuable information.
Thank you.
Senator Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, are we still on the Oregon Progress Board?
No, we gave up on the Oregon Progress Board. We're on page 4, capital improvement. Did you want to go back, Senator? I would yield to your...
I just wanted to say only one thing about the Oregon Progress Board, and that is it's actually a pretty obvious, is that while we have asked in terms of the budget process to tie to the goals that have been established by the Oregon Progress Board, the Oregon Progress Board's goals have more to do than just with the state. They have to do with that literally every level of government. They actually have to do with a lot of things that occur in the private sector that the state and local government are not in control of. They're basically a way of monitoring the health and welfare of the people of Oregon, is basically how I view them. So. Not just as a narrow measurement tool for the state operations.
And Senator Devlin, I appreciate your taking a look at that from a local level, but I would say this, as having served in local government, and I don't know whether you, when you were serving at that level, ever called up on the progress reports and said, let's see how we're doing, but we just did, we looked at them as lofty goals, and when I was in local government, and, you know, if I set a goal for you, and my goal is that you'll be driving a very expensive Mercedes-Benz to and from your pleasurable activities. Now, see, that's my goal for you. It's nothing more than a wish.
Yeah.
And to you, until you adopt that goal, it's not even a wish. I mean, you look at it and say, you know, if I wanted a Mercedes, I'd go buy it. But, you know, I'm not going to do that because I don't think it's a high priority. But that's how I when I came to state government and all of a sudden the Progress Board reports, which we had seen and we would look at and our we'd salivate over, gee, don't we wish we could do that, or, you know, don't we wish all the state could be there? When I come to state government and then was told, these are your goals, these are our goals for you, I said, well, that's really, really great that you have those goals for me. As long as they're not my goals, it's just a wish.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I understand that. And I've actually, you know, looked at the reports over the years, and I have some of those same feelings, particularly about some of the early years, when they would establish goals that you would ask, you know, how in the world are they going to get to this objective, you know, in 4 years or 3 years? We're going to lower teen pregnancy by this amount, you know. But I do think that they've become more realistic, actually, as time has gone on, in terms of trying to set real criteria.
Here, here, I agree with that fully.
First, I had some of those same feelings that, you know, but I still want to know, have some capability of monitoring what conditions are in the state for a lot of those different factors.
Senator Winters?
Mr. Chair, since he was picking on teen pregnancies, I had to weigh in. actually, as a result of having the goal or having the objective out there in the public discussion, you're seeing some attempts to reduce teen pregnancy, which I think is a good thing.
It elevates the discussion.
It elevated the discussion to where at the county levels, the city levels, and the state levels that it became an issue, a goal that was focused upon. And by focusing upon that goal at those levels, you have seen some changes. Mm-hmm. I know for me as a policy level, I was looking not only at Marion County, but I was looking where within Marion County were we having the high incidences, and talking to the school district, what can we do, you know, over in this particular. So I do think that it does elevate the discussion. And in that process, it also focuses our attention on what can we do to ameliorate the problem. So I just have to put that, since you talked about teen pregnancy.
I think, Senator, again, this has gone back to memory lane for me, because when I opened that up and saw the teen pregnancy issue, and compared where Mount Hare County was at, and then looked at some other counties, and then looked at the goal for the state and where Mount Hare County was at, then it did elevate the awareness and the discussion. And we began to talk to the schools to say, you know, what and our health department, county health department, and then looking at some of the other counties that had experienced actual reductions or who were enjoying low levels of teen pregnancy. So I think that it made us more aware of what the situation statewide was, and then maybe some of the factors that had contributed to some of the successes. And unfortunately, we found that it was somewhat like a long balloon. You start squeezing in one spot and it goes out another, and so when you get the teen pregnancy rate down, then the other STDs may have other incidents of sexually transmitted diseases pop up somewhere else. So some of those, and the cause and effect relationship isn't necessarily part of that goal setting process either. So, well, I appreciate that conversation. We do need to go ahead and complete page 4. We're on capital improvements. Representative Patridge, did you have something before we wanted to move into capital improvements?
Well, I just had some. I've been trying to go through the. I haven't had a chance to go through these PICS reports to any great extent, Mr. Chair. But I do have some questions about those. So whenever it's appropriate,
okay.
Let's
plan to come back to it. And I think that the idea, Dallas, of having managers of those general government agencies identify their top 5 reports is an excellent idea. Before we work any further report or any further budgets, Department of Budgets, maybe we'd ought to just put out an APB on those reports.
Hey, you're not over in Department of Corrections?
I owe for an APB.
Well, Doug's on there. I was just in Doug's office.
Okay.
I was pumping it out for our
committee. Okay.
Maverick has it done by Friday, since they should be on the shelf.
They certainly should be on the shelf, shouldn't they? That's something that all managers over there reach over and pick out and tell you exactly what they are. Dallas, next item, capital improvements and capital construction.
Okay. Under the capital improvements program, the department has some carryover projects that it wasn't able to complete in this biennium, and has requested, and I would be recommending approval also of increasing their other funds limitation by $1,195,089 for to complete projects in 2003-05 that they weren't able to complete in this current biennium. the staffing shortages and other issues that came up have prevented them from completing a number of significant. And these are maintenance projects. These are not capital construction. These are maintenance projects for like roofs and the like. So we feel that these needs continue need to be addressed, and we would be recommending approval of that increased limitation for capital improvements projects. It doesn't impact any of the rent or any other assessments or anything. It's just these needs were identified, and we'd like to carry forward.
So the capital improvements, because of that staffing shortage, is we were really prevented from wrapping up projects which have been previously authorized, which need to carry over into this. And then the capital construction, I understand, is under a separate bill, but included within the governor's recommendation of the Department of Administrative Services. Do you want to just touch base on that?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the capital construction bill is separate from the department's bill, although much of capital construction was included in the budget presentation. A number of the projects really are under the purview and funding of the department through facilities like the uniform rent buildings, but we've looked at the list, and it hasn't been, that capital projects bill has not been assigned yet to subcommittee. What we would like on the record is whether this committee is in concurrence with the capital projects in there. We would not recommend, however, concurring or making recommendation on two of the projects. Those would be the Justice Building renovation and the DEQ Health Laboratory projects, and that's because the funding for those really would be coming from those agencies and need to be reviewed in those respective subcommittees. So with respect to the capital construction, the committee will go on record as saying it basically concurs with the projects that have been proposed, with the but deferring any recommendation on those two projects, the Justice renovation, which would be, I believe, in your subcommittee. The funding would come through the Department of Justice and the DEQ Health Laboratory building.
Senator Winters. Representative Patridge.
Mr. Chair, I mean, Dallas, is this normal? We jump on the total capital outlay budget on the PICS from $48,943,000 to $74,484,000. I mean, that's a 50% jump?
Well, a lot, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, a lot has to do with just which projects are unfunded or provided for. This one, there's some...
I mean, that sounds like a pretty robust capital budget then, if we're jumping by 50%.
Justice was $12 million, I believe, and the... Okay, the DEQ one is some 30.
Yeah, I just wondered. I mean, it's a huge jump.
We've got a budget request here of $50 million.
I'm looking at the governor's balanced budget in the PICS report.
Or the orbit
total capital outlay.
Oh, that's different from capital construction. So.
Okay. So I'm in the wrong section?
Yeah.
Capital outlay versus capital construction. Capital outlay would be payment for the projects completed.
It would be for these projects plus other capital outlays in throughout the agency in various departments for acquisition of furniture and fixtures and the like. So it would be, I believe, capital improvements, capital construction, plus capital outlays in the various divisions for office, furniture, and support.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, Dallas is right that number contains a number of things. To get specifics to the capital construction piece of that, in that larger number, you would have seen a rollout of some of the costs that were related to the North Mall, for example, some of the larger capital construction projects that we worked on this biennium, and then a roll-in of the DEQ building, the Justice building, and those other pieces that are expected to be in the 03-05 biennium. So there's a couple of different things going on in those numbers.
That isn't line 5700, which is building structures. I mean, doesn't that include those other things? So this actually is the capital. I mean, the total capital outlay drops down to this line.
Without looking at exactly what you're looking at, I'll say I think you're right.
I'm looking at line 5700, which jumps from 11 million.
He's looking at the capital construction.
24 million to 50.
That's the capital construction.
That's what you're talking about.
Right.
Right.
You're correct.
So we're talking the same number.
Yeah, that's what's driving the number. Yeah.
Right, it's those large projects.
I didn't think I was wrong, but I just wanted to make sure what we were doing.
When we're talking about a DEQ project that's in excess of 30, the Justice Building that's in 12, and then there's some other smaller projects that are also within that $50 million limitation request.
But how much of that how much of that is debt service versus how much of that is?
What you would be, if you're looking at the line, I think you're looking at, well, you're seeing the actual expenditure. So any debt service would be someplace else. And those things aren't necessarily additive.
We would
give
you the expenditure limitation here, and we would give you the debt service limitation.
Correct. And those things wouldn't necessarily be additive. You can't say that it costs $50 million in one place and then whatever the debt service is in another place. They relate directly to each other. It's simply two separate areas that you have to show the expenditure.
But the DEQ building, because this was only a $25 million increase, so the between what they had previously for the 0103.
Again, and I think that's because you see some things are rolling out because we had some fairly significant things that we were expending this time. For the DEQ project specifically, the $30 million related to that project, funding for that would come from a COP. So you would see revenue coming in a COP. Debt service on that is not included in this budget at all because the expectation is that it doesn't start to get paid back until 2005-2007.
So the DEQ building?
Correct.
But we're rolling up the debt service on the DEQ building, too.
Correct. There's no the DEQ health lab that we're talking about, the specific $30 million piece, there's no debt service in this biennium for that project.
So we've rolled, so we're...
There will be a roll-up. Those costs will be borne by the agencies in 2005-2007 and beyond.
Okay, which is the same proposal that's being used for DPSST's facility.
Similar.
So what's the increased cost? So do you guys have an analysis of what the increased cost of the debt service? I mean, that's not going to be in this committee. Probably it'll be in the
Mr. Chair, Representative Petrich, we do have that information, and I'd be happy to get it for you again. And I think that's why LFO has recommended that because of the sizable roll-up to those specific agencies, that the subcommittees that are responsible for their budget hear that and make that decision.
But I'd just like to know, since I don't sit on that subcommittee, what the capital projects are, and I'm sure we'll get that. And what the funding mechanism is, whether we're rolling up the debt service in the initial piece or whether we're going to fund part of the debt service as the project continues.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patrick, that's one of the reasons for deferring letting the subcommittee sell.
I understand that.
The very reason that there was no construction for the DPSST facility is that there was no debt service provided. The governor didn't.
In that agency's
in
budget.
That agency.
We understand
budget.
That well.
So, and then the capital construction.
Representative Johnson could probably tell you all about it.
But there's also the bond bill, which contains all the
items
that ties out. So.
Senator Winters, and then
just an observation, because we were talking about maybe in the interim doing some streamlining, and I think if we note all these questions that we asked that were things, that might be a way of getting to some place when we construct the budget that we're eliminating, have a process to where we're not having to ask all these questions.
Dallas, come on, right on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good on you.
Okay. Special payments?
Special payments, yes, sir. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, here we're recommending special payments, the elimination of $878,536 general fund appropriation payment to the General Children's Trust Fund. Also, we'd like to get on the record that in the governor's balanced budget, there was some $131 million included in this line item, which we being Legislative Fiscal Office, has moved for presentation purposes to the OHSU budget. And that's the $131 million is about $106 million in bond proceeds and $25 million in debt service. That will be reflected in the budget bill for Oregon Health Sciences University. So we are taking it out of here. It is currently included in the bill, at least the payments of this amount is included in the bill. We will be making an amendment to the bill, of course, with limitation.
$106 million was debt service.
$106 million is no proceeds from the issuance of bonds. Okay. $25 million is debt service of the bonds that have been previously issued. So our recommendation is, this is just to get on record that is a cause for a change in the budget amount or in the budget bill.
Okay.
I'd also like to point out for the record that the debt service for the Oregon appropriation bonds, which were approved in the sixth special session, I think, is going to be provided for in a separate bill. They're still working out details on that. It is expected that limitation will eventually have to be provided for the Department of Administrative Services for this, but
it's coming in a separate bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, question of staff.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Making that arrangement is satisfactory to OHSU.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson. Yes, OHSU, this is the Department of Administrative Services is really the conduit for the funds. And so we just, for budgeting purposes, have felt the truth in budgeting would put that funding in the bill with that provides other support for OHSU.
We'll so feel the difference.
Truth in budgeting is good.
Are we going to do another truth in budgeting?
Let's not go too far on this, Senator.
Sorry. I
think
we're on a roll this morning.
Continuing on, Special
Chairman. Okay. Yep. Also, for purposes of the budget and the orbits, the new budgeting system, there's a certain amount of rigidity in the system that once you provide for revenue estimates, unless in the budget process, unless there's something that documents the agency's ability to make adjustments to those revenue estimates, the good keepers of the system don't allow you to make those changes, and it results in some rather it reports out balances at the period end that don't reflect actually which of those things that have happened. And we'd like to put it document in the budget report that the department has the authority to adjust revenue estimates as conditions change and to be able to adjust them then in the budget system so that when we get the system presents it just allows it to present more properly the revenue estimates that have changed.
Mr. Chair, can I get clarification on that?
Kelly, because, do you want to go ahead and give us
because we update
go ahead and
the record. The record, Kelly, for the Department of Administrative Services. I'm not clear as to what the problem is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Treasurer has asked for this authority, too. It's just some documentation that allows agencies when revenue estimates change, to get them recorded in the actual system, I believe, that requires some sort of backup authority. Otherwise, the only document you have is the original budget document. And I'm relying here on agency people to correct me if I'm wrong, because this is something that is they've asked us to get on the record because of the existing rigidity in the system itself. That you're not allowed to make changes to the budget without some sort of authority.
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you for the clarification.
Oh. Thank you, Kelly. Continuing on then.
The next item is, as we talked about, performance measures that the committee, your staff recommends that you acknowledge that the subcommittee has reviewed and is in general agreement with the department's performance measures. These have been were presented some weeks ago at the beginning of their budget presentation.
Okay.
And we would put this in the budget report. Also, these are for inclusion in the budget report, possibly in the narrative, like some the authority to provide some discussion that the department would be expected to work with the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology to identify savings in other state agencies from reduced duplication and consolidation of information technology infrastructure throughout state government. This is caused by a concern that
budgets are often looked at in different agencies, and yet there's a lot of interest in consolidating or getting rid of duplication of effort. We find that it's quite often state agencies are a little hesitant to identify any potential savings or positions that are directly identified with something that might be viewed as duplicative. And so we would like something on the record to recommend that this department is, you know, acknowledging taking the lead with the Information Resource Management Division, work with the Interim Committee on Information Management Technology, so that we can bring the other agencies to the fore to discuss this and where savings could truly occur, and that be communicated then and can carry forward to future budgets.
Representative Patridge?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to read that once again. I mean, I haven't read that one in particular. I heard what you said.
Okay.
But I'd like to read that at some point.
Senator Winters?
Mr. Chair, I think that directive is good, but I thought this was the expectation all along that this is not a new expectation, but one that I know has been expected since I've been in the legislature, and one that was expected when I was in executive.
I think you've got a new manager and somebody who's experienced in this regard. So, Dallas, you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I think the expectation has always been there. This provides a little more specificity and would direct to one committee, and I think the result and outcome, we could even expand upon it, that maybe the Information Management Technology Committee could come forward with recommendations to the next legislative assembly with respect to these sort of savings. It's just to get it on the record as a reinforcement of the commitment of the legislature to these savings.
Further comments or questions? Okay. We've now received the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal. We need to probably go back to bottom of page 3. Representative Johnson, if you would just take a quick look at the Oregon Progress Board there, and would you like to make a comment on the recommendation by Legislative Fiscal?
Unfortunately, Mr. Chair, I think you're working off Dallas's memo, and I left the copy of it in my office. As I recall, the staff recommendation is to eliminate the three positions in the Progress Board from my read of the memorandum from yesterday.
You're absolutely correct.
If I understand it correctly, that is a complete elimination of the Progress Board. It doesn't move it someplace else. It just eliminates it.
And Representative Johnson, one of the items...
I want to make sure Dallas rolled his eyes like I might have missed something here. Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson, the discussion previously was that you had expressed some concern that the position should be left, that perhaps there could be charitable funding or corporate funding that could assist us. And without the positions, it is in fact, without funding and the position authority, then it is in fact that basically the demise of the department of this progress.
Well, I understand, Mr. Chair, that in many people's opinion, the Progress Board has helped create a framework against which to assess agency performance.
And we have had a healthy discussion of that.
Good. Then I won't belabor that. My opinion was formed largely around a conversation that I had with a senior staff person at the Oregon Community Foundation back about a million special sessions ago. I can't even remember which one, but it was the first time that the Progress Board surfaced as on the potential cut list. And I was being lobbied rather heavily to advocate on behalf of the Progress Board, and I was being told how important this work was to the functioning of state government. Given that I was talking to a foundation executive with assets somewhere approaching $400 or $500 million, and they're in the business of giving away money, my, I think, legitimate question was, if this has such a high value to the corporate community and to the philanthropic community, whose work product you use to help assess the efficacy of grants, why don't you guys step up and help pay for it? To my delight, the Oregon Community Foundation offered $15,000 towards a private sector contribution to keep the Progress Board going. And while I think that was an excellent start, I have heard no additional information about fundraising energy around external fundraising. I had suggested to the foundation executive that I spoke with that it seemed to me that the corporate community and the Oregon Business Council seemed a logical place to start because Duncan Wise had been so involved with the genesis of the Progress Board. And I don't know whether any overtures were made to the corporate community, and I would welcome hearing from Director Weeks whether or not beyond the $15,000 commitment from the Oregon Community Foundation, any energy had been expended in trying to seek outside resources. I don't know that piece, and that might instruct my opinion as we move forward. With your permission, could we hear from the director?
Certainly, Director Weeks. back to the hot seat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Johnson, the Progress Board has raised about $20,000 to date. The bulk of that is from the Oregon Community Foundation. And overtures have been made to other foundations, and I think it's going to take us some time to work on that. Also to the Oregon Business Council, I myself have had conversations with Duncan Wise about the opportunity we might have with the Business Council to raise some money. But we just, you know, we've been into this for about a month and a half now, out starting to make connections and everything. What this budget would require is us to do that. We have no money. We had proposed to fund the work of the Progress Board through a combination of assessments to agencies because we think there's a benefit to all agencies and to fundraising. That was our proposal. Without the staff, there's virtually no Progress Board, and there's no fundraising or anything. So the short answer is we've only raised $20,000. We have a commitment. We understand the legislature's urging to go out and raise money, and we're going to try to do that.
Mr. Chair, may I follow up?
Yes, please.
I guess, to be blunt, one of the difficulties that I have in looking at funding this position with agency assessments is that the pooled agencies are getting hit for an awful lot of stuff, and having run an agency at one time, I know that seeing the just constant assessments where you have no ability to have any input and it gets done to you, not with you, there is a tolerance, I think, for the agency's ability to continue to absorb activities. We are simultaneously asking lots of Oregonians to tighten their belts pretty significantly. We're throwing people off the health plan. We are tossing the developmentally disabled out of group homes. And to be an active advocate for a policy function within the agency that I see as the leadership in guiding agency behavior is kind of a tough sell, and coming to the assessed agencies and asking them to continue to pay higher rent, higher janitorial, higher lights, and for these kind of functions, it causes me some anxiety. If preserving the positions in some way allows for additional external fundraising, that's someplace I could go. But I need to hear a stronger case personally for policy work coming out of agency assessments. I don't have, I think, a fully developed universe of how many new assessments are going to get whacked on agencies to cover stuff that somebody has deemed essential to life going on as we know it, and those folks paying into the agencies are beginning to say, when does this stop?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I know this. I understand this is a difficult sell. I would like to have you think about the Progress Board as not just a policy agency, because the work of the Progress Board to connect the benchmarks that the state has adopted to the work of agencies, the actual goals, individual goals of agencies, and the way that those goals are measured is program work. It's not just policy work. And our feeling was that there is a reason to do an assessment because it affects program work at the agencies. It affects the goals, the measurements of those goals, the performance of that agency, and so on. Now, if an assessment's not possible, then we'll have to try to find another way. It's just, I'm sorry you weren't here earlier, but I was trying to once again say to the committee representative how important this group is to the governor. The Progress Board he sees as a fundamental part of being able to drive
and to change the performance of government.
Mr. Chair, may I continue?
Please, Representative Johnson.
Respectfully, I apologize for not being here. I was actually in the governor's office talking about how do we conclude the session.
Did you get an answer, Representative?
No, I didn't.
Can you give me at least a date?
Yeah. I have no date, no answer, no clue. And recognizing, I lost my train of thought just briefly. I know that this is important to the governor, but I have to tell you one of the other things that colors my personal decision-making on this is the slide that got passed up here in about the second week or second day of your presentation, saying that it is the expectation of DAS that 60% of your managers will reach minimum managerial standards. And I'm trying to think, if that's a baseline that you guys are operating off of and proud enough to put up on the wall, this goes so far beyond that, you've got some fundamental work to do before we start connecting benchmarks to agency performance. And I'm perfectly willing to be dissuaded up from that position. But I can't help but sit in this room and look at Mr. Hazelwood, who I know is an advocate for seniors, and somehow prioritize agency behavior against human needs when one expects agencies to be acting prudently, linked to benchmarks, performing at optimum levels. I have a tough personal problem doing that, and I think that the remuneration in this area, and I know that that's probably done on some kind of comparison, but the remuneration is high when I think of people surviving on I'm having a hard time balancing human needs against dysfunction, knowing that it's a priority for the governor. And I'm begging you to give me a reason why I ought to go up the hill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, if the assessment is not the answer, we'd at least like to be able to say, give us the staff so we have a chance to go out and raise the money, and having raised the money, be able to continue this work. I mean, there are other options. I can continue to look at within DAS to see if there's a way to transfer some form of resources to them. I'm not talking about any increase in assessments, representative, or anything, but maybe there's some way I can figure out how to help. I mean, we've moved the progress board over to DAS to reduce their rent. We've cut the budget for the progress board 28% from the last two budgets.
All out of services and supplies, right?
No, out of not doing some things like the summary that we do every 2 years.
I got some mixed messages, Director Weeks. I see your capable staff nodding her head one way and you answering another way.
Yeah, but yes, yes, was that big check of the survey? The big. I'm sorry, Representative. I'm easily corrected here. Yeah, you're right. There was service and supply cuts, but there was also a large chunk of money that comes from doing the survey that we do every couple of years, which we're not plugging in into the budget. So, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I am willing to have us look to see if we can do this work with fewer positions than three. That's another option, Representative. I'm just urging you to give me a fighting chance to keep the program alive with other kinds of money. And
I think we're headed in a direction where I could become an advocate. You're saying we could do it with fewer positions, we could find the money internally, just don't eliminate the positions, but it would be okay not to fund them. And I see Ms. Becker's head going.
Yeah, they're not, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, they're not funded now. We had always expected we were going to have to find the revenue for them.
So the real debate here is whether or not the position survived.
Right, that's exactly right, Representative. Representative Patridge is recognized. Chair, I asked them to pass out the PICS report so people can go through them, but nobody at DAS has the PICS report with them, and you guys don't have your PICS report, so I don't know how. So what I'm going to do is run through, and maybe you guys want to write down what we can do. I'd like some explanation on some of the line items in the DAS report. And I don't know.
Which is part of the front end. With regard to this program?
No, in regard to the. I've got several questions. I'd like to start on page. This is the administrative services. I think it's about the third report in.
It's what page are you on?
This is the one of 33 pages.
1 in 33.
It says 1 of 33. I'm starting on page 3 of 33.
And if we could hit this at a fairly high level at this point, then
we'll
come back
we'll
tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll ask for detailed explanation, but I'd like Carboni, explanation.
I know that Jim Carboni is John as well.
Are we there? Are we there where we're at? My first question is on page 3 of 33.
Yes, sir.
Item number 0410,
mm-hmm.
Charges for services. There's a $100 million jump in charges for services between the 0103 estimates and the 0305 governor's balanced budget. I'd like a little more detailed explanation. That's a $100 million difference there.
These are non-limited funds.
I understand that, but I'd like to know where they're being generated from.
Okay.
On page 17 of 33, your temporary appointments at the top of the page, your all funds raised from $550,000 to $3.5 million. I'd like an explanation of that. Going down the page on 3180, your shift differential jumps by $50,000.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, can I go back?
How about if we give you a highlighter, Gary, and then you
No,
go
I'm marking them. You want to know why the cost dropped.
No,
from one by aid to another in temporary services.
No, I'm looking at the estimates for 0103 versus where we're at for 0305, and you jump 50,000 there.
Mm-hmm.
That's not
as
big a deal. On page 21 of 33,
mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Line item 4100, in-state travel.
Mm-hmm.
You have over a 10% jump in-state travel for this biennium as opposed to what your estimate was this biennium. You have about $170,000 more in in-state travel budgeted. In all funds, okay?
Yes.
And on page 23 of 33, next page, top of the page, the data processing fees jump from $17 million to $26
million.
Mm-hmm. In addition, your publicity and publications jumps on line item 4275, jumps about $500,000 for publications on your all funds piece there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your professional services jump close to $3 million. Or $2 million, I guess, on line 4300.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering where you're going to use those services and what's going to go on. Next page, page 24 of 33. On line 4375, your employee recruitment and development jumps from $144,000 to $461,000. I see that that's other funds, non-limited. I'm wondering what we're doing there. Your facilities maintenance, I think this is dealing with deferred maintenance on page 25 of 33. That's line 4475.
Yep.
Jumps from 20,789 in estimated expenditures to 1.6 million. And I go down to agency-related services and supplies on the bottom of page 25 on line item 4575.
Mm-hmm.
You jump from $56 million to $72 million. That's a $16 million jump. And then on 4650, the next page, page 26 of 33,
mm-hmm.
I know your estimates are higher. I'm trying to get a handle around what's in other services and supplies. We'd approved $15 million. That jumps to $17 million. But you had an expense. You had a substantial expense there, apparently, that was over budget. I'd like an explanation of why it was over budget and then what your issue is for this time to justify the $17
million estimates.
As above to what it was before. So we don't need to answer all those now. I wanted to get you those to see what we can, just to get an understanding of where we're at on those line items. There's some pretty significant jumps there, and I just want the explanation before we move forward with the budget.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we'll get you a description of each one of those.
Thank you very much, Director Weeks. We've completed all four pages of review with the Legislative Fiscal Office. We'll come back for some responses tomorrow, and we'll have undoubtedly Ms. Parker and Mr. Carboni here as well. And with that, we'll go ahead and carry this work session over on House Bill 5002 on the Department of Administrative Services until 8:30 tomorrow.